Blog Talk Radio.
I think that's a good note to stop on. We can't get our stop until we get our share. We'd like to welcome you to the return of On Point with Black Politics in Minneapolis. I have on the other end my co-host, mentor, and civil rights activist, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards, and myself, Don Allen. Mr. Edwards, it's been a while here. It's been a year. We're back by popular demand. And
first of all, good afternoon, Don. Yeah, here sure, from the beautiful sure. Twin Cities, beautiful fall day here. Of course, the University of Minnesota lost again, but what the heck? But hey, it's a beautiful fall day, and certainly the team of Don and Ron and Don, heckle and jive. in the words of one of the great esteemed leaders of the Negro community. But heckle and jive, whoever are, you know, back in play, want to be in position as we take a look at the run towards the November 6th date, which will be a date that will forever live in memory or infamy. But what do we got today, Don, as Don and Ron are back?
Well, we are expecting a congressional candidate for Minnesota's actually 5th Congressional District, Chris Fields, to contact us.
I've got the boxing gloves. I had the boxing right. gloves delivered to studio. Okay.
Okay. Yes, yes. And again, we're waiting for him to give us a jingle here. And then we're also going to be talking about quite a few things from the Viking Stadium to the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, the education.
Is it still around? I didn't know it was still in business.
Oh, the Civil Rights Department?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're kind of on the down low, but, you know, I mean, they're down there to get a check from the city, I'm sure. So,
okay, just playing a little opera music, you
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Beethoven's Fifth Symphony in Fatal Attractions. But anyways, I'm sorry, Don. By the way, school district, test scores aren't up. I'm confused because I thought that was going to be the mandate and the legacy of our beloved superintendent. Steve Brandt, writing in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, indicates that the test scores are as deplorable now as ever before, any time in modern history. Will the African American ever be educated in the Minneapolis public schools?
That's really hard to answer because, you know, Mr. Edwards, in 2008, the Minneapolis public schools pushed the levy. They wanted anybody to vote for that referendum, I should say, and they said that they were going to do so many wonderful things to educate the poor minority child in the Minneapolis public school systems. And there were about 7 or 8 initiatives, according to their website, MinneapolisPublicSchools.com or .edu. You can check it out. And as today, you know, I go back and look at them. And if you look at the Minnesota Department of Education's website, it seems like the higher they go up in grade, the lower the proficiency gets. So now we have a system where, you know, like you're saying, you know, you have whole schools that are in the teens as far as proficiency. And we know that passing's at 70%. Well, none of these schools in the poor communities of color have even reached 20%. So, yeah,
wow.
That is a huge challenge for the Minneapolis public schools. And maybe at some point, you know, they will let someone take over that actually knows what they're doing.
Well, now, the school districts, because I see they're in court, the district court, state court, suing to you know, require the state of Minnesota to pay for a couple charter schools, and also I think there's $78 million that the state owes them. Now, am I to understand that the district's top people have been giving back their bonuses?
I find that, yeah, that's like me finding a quarter on the ground, Mr. Edwards. You know I'm not giving that quarter to nobody but my pocket.
Okay, because I just thought as a part of good consciousness and good, you know, civic commitment and good citizenship and et cetera, that if you don't meet your goals, that, you know, you don't accept the bonuses. But someone said to me, no, that's dumb thinking, Edwards. I mean, that we, you know, I mean, we're here to make profit off the quote-unquote failure, of the children of color.
And,
right?
You know, yeah, exactly. And Mr. Edwards, they have four lingering problems that they've had, like, probably for over 10 years, you know, with the first one being 81% of African-American children in Minneapolis public schools fail to achieve proficiency in math. Number two, over 2,500 of African-American students were suspended from the Minneapolis public schools in 2011. And 1,117 of those were in kindergarten to fifth grade.
Oh, so, get them early. Get them early.
Get them
like
early.
Roberta Englander said, get them early. Put them in chains. Put them in bondage. Put them in the penitentiary.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the theme here in Minnesota. But go ahead.
And then in any given year, only 35% of black students who should graduate actually finish. And last but not least, the Minneapolis Public Schools is failing to prepare African-American students for college or real jobs after high school. And these are all factual based off information that...
Now, this is not some stuff that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde are making up, right? This is empirical data from
the Minneapolis
white folks,
public,
right?
Yeah.
Minneapolis Public Schools.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, by the way, on that particular note, we also want to throw in the figure because things are going so well. See, I hear conservatives saying, you know, push the little colored children out of school early and, you know, make them go to work. I mean, that used to be the philosophy in the 1920s and 30s because there is so much job opportunity for African Americans here in the Twin Cities, right?
Oh, there's according to the disparity report, Mr. Edwards, they should be just overflowing with jobs. And, you know, we're being sarcastic, of course. We want to let our audience know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there are not supposedly there's not many opportunities. But, you know, if I guess if you're in the white right place at the white time, you could probably get something there.
Now, what do we mean when we talk about career paths based on the statistical data you've just given us? The career path is where? To the, as Booker T. Hodges, president of the Minneapolis NAACP, said in a very eloquent way, their career path is to the penitentiary and the jail, right?
Yeah.
Is that the career path?
That is the path, as you stated, the NAACP Minneapolis chair said, is basically going to the jailhouse from the high school. And Mr. Edwards, I'm pretty sure that this might be our guest, and so let me.
Oh, let's get him in.
But
let me just say this before he comes on the air. You did extend in the doctrine of fairness. Did you extend a invitation to the incumbent?
Yes, I did. I sent out several messages in writing and to his personal colleagues that are associates of mine also. That feel that I might be a little tough on the distributor of cake, as I call him. And it was there. And by fairness and the fairness doctrine, we should go ahead and do that and give him the opportunity right now. And I would just like to put it out there, Mr. Edwards, if he is listening or if his colleagues or maybe he can have someone to pick up the phone and call, our call-in number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-246-3904. And right now, I am very pleased to welcome to On Point Black Politics in Minneapolis candidate Mr. Chris Fields. How are you doing, sir?
Welcome, Mr. Fields. Go right ahead, Mr. Allen. Just you know, start the discussion.
Okay, Mr. Fields. Hello. Okay. We're having a little bit of technical difficulty, and the producers are trying to get him back online there. Mr.
Okay.
We'll try that again. And, okay, he will call.
Now, Mr. Fields is running, of course, as a Republican against the incumbent Keith Ellison, Congressman Keith Ellison, who is a Democrat, so that people are clear across the country and across the world that the party affiliations. We, you know. By the way, I just want to say I'm a, you know, registered Democrat. So I mean, you know, so there's absolute clarity, transparency, all those popular words. So, you know, on this end, this co-host is a registered Democrat. So we're not, you know, we're not carrying, I'm not carrying any Democratic water, or nor am I carrying any GOP water. I'm just a quote unquote a good citizen who likes a good, tough, clean campaign.
Yeah, and this is with you saying that we have to let people understand. I just read a book called Political Brain, The Role of Emotion in Deciding the Fate of the Nation. And we have those in our community and all over the United States, that's not here in the Twin Cities or in Minnesota, that have forgotten what civil discourse is and the use of rhetoric and the need for a conversation from both ends. And that's why right now we have, you know, a lot of question marks on these different amendments, which we'll get into later, and some other things. And we just want to kind of set the record straight. On this end of the line, you know, I guess I could say I'm a registered conservative, but I am voting for President Obama. The national issue today for this particular conversation is off the table for the moment, but we want to concentrate on the 5th Congressional District and the state of Minnesota and try to correct some longtime wrongs by the distribution of information.
And I mean, we have to all remember, this is the party of Hubert Humphrey, Eugene McCarthy, Walter Mondale, you know, Wendell Anderson. I mean, some of the great names of the past.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this is clearly the party of liberalism, really. Have we got Mr. Fields back? Have we got the technical difficulty solved yet? Because
the producers
looks like
to
hear from it.
Yeah, the producers are actually working on it right now.
They'll
just chime in right in when he when they get in touch with him. But in the meantime, we can continue this conversation because there is there's an event going on right now in North Minneapolis and I find this kind of ironic, Mr. Edwards, and there's irony in it that's very interesting. There's an event going on where they're putting out lawn signs for the Vote No amendment. And for voter ID and yes, voter ID and the same sex marriage.
Voter ID. You mean kind of like the apartheid pass system in South Africa a couple of decades ago.
Yes.
Yeah. I hear many say that we need this to deal with voter fraud. Except there's what is it? One out of every 15 million votes is a voter fraud.
Yeah,
we need to have draconian laws in a prepared draconian society.
Exactly. And, you know, this amendment, I should say, for the voter ID, Mr. Edwards, to me, it seemed like, you know, it could have been better. I mean, right now as it stands, yeah, I agree with voting no to some extent. But if there was a workforce model put in there where people should get their IDs and it could track who was working, who was not working, route them to education, who had a GED, who didn't, who needed to be in college. And there was a lot of room for that. And since it wasn't initiated and that kind of information or requirements weren't put into the bill, then to me it's kind of a lame duck thing to do. Just to have an idea.
Well, I know this is a time of concern about national security and et cetera. I mean, geez, we just had a guy from Bangladesh attempt to blow up the, according to the FBI, blow up the Federal Reserve Bank there in New York City, where all of the gold of the United States and 68 other countries or nations is stored, except that's not true. All that gold was removed from Manhattan after 9/11, but and rightly so, transported and secured at Fort Knox down there in Kentucky. But I mean, Dan, I have to take exception with you a little bit. I mean, these are the times; these are dark times. We have Islamists and Al Qaeda and others running around the countryside. You know, what is this—the 18th or 19th? Sting operation that the FBI and Homeland Security have initiated. In just the last couple of years, I mean.
I'm sorry, did we need to interrupt you? Stand by.
Go right ahead.
Hello, you're live on Point. Is this Mr. Fields?
No, this is not Mr. Fields. This is Minister K.G. Wilson.
Oh, Mr. Wilson, if we have to interrupt your question, we have Mr. Fields coming on. But go ahead, K.G., go ahead.
No, real quickly, I just called to just say to you and my big brother Ron, man, thank you for all you do in the community, and thank you for continuing this awesome educational radio show, man. And I just wanted to show appreciation for you and thank you for the support that you have given me throughout the years.
Okay.
All right.
Well,
thank you, brother KG.
Appreciate that.
All right.
Appreciate that, KG.
KG Wilson.
You're welcome. God bless you, brothers.
All right. Thanks, take care.
Sir.
KG Wilson, one of the few street advocates, if you will, seeing at the scene of many of the tragedies. You know, unfortunately, Don, though we've been away for about a year and a quarter, unfortunately, there's still violence in our streets. And so, you know, that kind of takes me back to what I was saying just seconds ago. I mean, we've got to have a secure nation. I mean, we have to have security, if you will. I follow closely and have been for the last year or so, Billy Bob's websites and et cetera. And, you know, I appreciate what Mitt Romney has said. I mean, there comes a time when the dark shadow that has been cast over America, you know what I mean, needs to be lifted. I mean, you know, we can't continue to be impacted by these foreign influences, Don.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%.
Yeah, darkness and foreign just don't go together, Don. It's not a part of the red, white, and blue, baby.
Yep, not at all.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Oh, well, with Minister K.G. Wilson getting through, we know that the people are out there listening and the phone lines are open.
Yeah.
Hey, we are encouraging. Well, let's get into this situation with candidate or challenger Fields. Now, they're apparently tomorrow morning, I'm being told, and I saw a kind of an advanced tape. There was nearly a fist fight in KSTP studios earlier in the week between the incumbent Congressman Keith Ellison and the challenger, Mr. Fields. Boy, you could just see the intensity. But I had a chance, Don, to listen to the exchange when references were made that Mr. Fields was a scumbag. You know what I mean? Now, here's the thing I want to say about that, and hopefully it will be able to get Mr. Fields. You know, I've watched particularly since 2010, I watched the Tea Party just disrespect everything that is black, if you will, and certainly constitutionally proper. Oops. And, you know, I watched Joe Wilson of South Carolina, for those that don't have a historical perspective, scream out during the president's State of the Union message, called him a liar. Never had happened in the history of the Congress of the United States that Joe was moderately censured, if you will, you know. And I didn't see, you know, the black congressional caucus really should have torn the chambers up. But I don't remember the good congressman calling old Joe Wilson a scumbag for insulting for the first time in history.
I got it.
Hey, we have Mr. Fields here.
Oh, that's very good. Let's get it.
Live on the air with us. And welcome, Mr. Chris Fields, candidate Fields.
Thanks, Don. I apologize for being late. We had an event go a little bit later than we wanted it to. Had an opportunity to talk to the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, and we talked about a couple of things. So we really apologize for being late.
No, it's okay. And sometimes things like that happen, and they might be for the better, because Mr. Edwards and I, who is on the other end here, the co-host here, have talked about quite a few things, and we have just started on the incident that happened the other day there at KFAI. But
yeah, I heard a little bit of that.
Yeah, before we get all into that, and I would just like to say, Ms. Fields, I know that you have been active in arranging to have these type of things and forums and interviews at a time where community members can attend. And in the middle of the day, a lot of us, well, those of us that are fortunate to have jobs or be in school or wherever, are at school. And I know back in 2008, as I've told you on several occasions, you know, I was a campaign manager for Barb Davis White, who ran against Congressman Ellison and had such disregard for candidate Barb Davis White that he would send his son to sit in for debate. And so he would never even show up. And she fought tooth and nail to make sure that these debates and these community forums were at a time when community members could actually be in the audience. So, I mean, I commend you for getting all the radio play, the television play, and a couple other things that are going on, because that's important for to get the message out. But getting back to the other day, and we're not going to really spend a long time. We're not going to go into a lot of the negativity. And as Mr. Edwards and I said earlier, we're more concerned about the issues here in the 5th Congressional District and what has and has not been done and what has been said. I guess my first question to you, Mr. Fields, or Candidate Fields, is that what does the 5th Congressional District need immediately, and what would you do to make that happen once you get in Congress?
Well, I mean, we started it already, and I'm going to address a couple of things that you brought up. Well, we started to do what needs to be done in the 5th Congressional District already, okay? And that is to remove the biggest obstacle to change in the 5th Congressional District. And from my perspective, I see it as Keith Ellison. I see it as Congressman Keith Ellison. He is an obstacle to change, okay? And here's why. Congressman Ellison, okay, came into office in 2006, and he had a bit of a sketchy past. But you know what? He was known in the community, and a lot of people forgave him. A lot of people all throughout his district forgave him, okay? And what did he do with that forgiveness? And that was right, because in America, people get forgiveness, and you get a second chance, okay? And that's one of the good things about America. So what did he do with it? He went to Washington and became famous by talking about Syria and Libya, Guantanamo Bay, you know, Citizens United. But what happened to us? Or what happened to the people in the 5th Congressional District? Okay, their situation didn't get any better. We have high unemployment, the worst unemployment gap between blacks and whites in the entire country. We have the worst achievement gap between blacks and whites in the entire country, right here in the 5th Congressional District. And our congressperson is talking about Libya? That's the wrong answer. The right answer is to fire Keith Ellison, hire Chris Fields. Okay, and when I tell you what I'm doing, I just talked with the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, and we talked about what a legislative agenda could look like for the 5th Congressional District. Talked about enterprise zones. Okay, and we talked about create the conditions so that private enterprise and private investment starts coming back to our urban core. And you know what? Since I've been in this race, that's what I've been talking about. How do we bring back private investment so that we can get business ownership, small business ownership, increase that number? We've got to become an opportunity society and an ownership society. And that is part of one overall big strategy, because we also have to tackle education, and by that I mean we have to make sure that state and local boards have the flexibility they need with regard to education. I'm not convinced that they do, because these achievement gaps wouldn't persist.
Okay, Chris, I want to interject there, because you said something that's very interesting about access to, and I'm going to put it in my words and correct me if I'm wrong, access to capital from private investors, maybe for business startups and things like that. Right now, you know, and if you don't know, I'll inform you here. Governor Mark Dayton and the Commissioner of Deed, Mark Phillips, have put pretty much a stranglehold on, and this is money from the government, but this is also money that's sitting there that, well, private investors aren't going to come in when you have a system here or a state that shuns away the private investors, or if the private investors do come to the table, they are routed appropriately through the state government to pick and cherry pick what they can and cannot do. So we have a hard way to go in that sense of business.
But let me tell you how you fix that problem.
Okay.
Okay. And so we got $2 trillion in corporate profits overseas. Okay. $2 trillion. The corporate tax rate in the United States is 35%. Okay, that's the corporate tax rates for these big multinationals. Okay, when I tell those guys If you invest your money, now we have to do big things, okay? This is a big election. It is about big things. And so we have to fix our tax code and we have to fix the regulatory environment. What I'm saying with a federal enterprise zone is start here right now. Let's get this money moving over here because we have been disproportionately hurt by the economic downturn. So that $2 trillion stuck overseas, when I tell those guys, hey, you can bring that money into the 5th Congressional District and not pay that 35% tax. Guess what? That money is coming. Now, that money is coming. The governor won't be able to stop that. That'll be a tsunami of cash coming into the 5th Congressional District looking to do all sorts of things. You can tell Cisco, hey, build your plant here. You're not going to pay that 35%. That's a big savings for those guys. And what happens is we become so attractive to private investment that they just come in here and eat it up.
Well,
it puts us back to work.
Well, I guess my next question is that, you know, I've been here. I grew up here, you know, lived everywhere across the United States, but I'm from here. I grew up here. And I've watched an area like in South Minneapolis and North Minneapolis in the heavy populated minority ethnic zones, which is Black, Hispanic, Somali now, Asian. And I've watched areas like that systematically crumble with no services. And I know the Republican platform says, okay, small government, you know, fiscal responsibility. But how can you get the average voter who doesn't have a job, is deciding between Skittles and iced tea for dinner, to think small government, to think fiscal responsibility when they don't have, you know, and I'll just say it, don't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out. It seems to me that, you know, I mean, I've listened to almost everything you put out there, candidate Fields, and, you know, I'm comfortable with it. I'm kind of in and I'll be really honest with you, I'm in an undecided phase. I'm almost at the point where I, you know, today if I had to vote, I would leave the thing blank, basically, for Congress, okay? But since I have you here on the air, I need to ask you these questions because not only do I want to clarify this for myself, I need to clarify this for our listeners and the people in the 5th Congressional District, but we have such a high rate of poverty and no opportunities, and the level that you're talking about is a level at a federal level that us little people aren't going to see the many moving parts. So,
okay, let me connect the dots for you.
Thank you.
Okay, so if I tell Cisco, hey, you can come over here and not pay 35% in taxes. Cisco's got to build something, okay? More people have to go to that job site where they're building it, okay? I can sell those people coffee. I can swing a hammer just like any of those guys, okay? So now there's opportunity for minority contractors. The minority contractors, when they get paid, well, they're going to start making some home improvements when people start getting jobs and stuff like that. And so it is a ripple effect. This is not top down. This is, you know, hey, everybody's getting their back scratched, okay? But the thing is, you have to start by getting that private capital in there and having these guys say, I want to make a decision, and my decision is to build something here. My decision is to start having a relationship with this community, okay? And that's not just Northside. That's everywhere, and that $2 trillion is a lot of money.
Yes, it is.
Let me, Mr. Fields, Ron Edwards here. Don't want it, but you know we want to stay on top of any number of subjects as it pertains to the good of the 5th District. You talk about $2 trillion in investment abroad, if you will, and of course a lot of that investment is in Europe. Now there's a serious crises in Europe, which is certainly having an effect on the European Union, the
yep.
central banks, and et cetera. What have you given as a concern with respect to pulling that much investment out of Europe, and particularly I refer to them as the piggies, and that's Portugal and Greece,
right.
and Spain, and Ireland.
Right now they ain't getting it.
Well,
how much
investment, Mr. Fields, are you talking about pulling out and pulling back into the United States at a particular time?
Well, first off, it's not ours. It doesn't belong to the government to pull out. What I'm saying is You know, this is basic
economics. But you're the regulator. The government is the regulator. You regulate how investments can be done, contrary to what people are saying. You're still the government. You deal with, particularly when you start talking in terms of investments going to the central banks of other countries. So you the government, quote unquote,
you're the regulator.
That money is in
Cisco's bank account right now, okay? And not just Cisco, a whole bunch of other multinationals. It's in their bank account. And basic economics says this: capital, money, resources, whatever it is, it will go where it's most productive. And once you blow that whistle, hey, guys, the 5th Congressional District is the most profitable place that you can deploy your capital. That money is coming.
I understand, Mr. Fields, because you're kind of repeating yourself on this. That's why I want to go into some specificity and detail. Talk to us a little bit about how you would bring back those jobs and industries that have been outsourced to Europe and Asia and South America. How would you, as a part of this investment portfolio and investment tsunami, as you refer to it, how would you begin to bring back those outsourced industries? What's your plan there?
What you got to start doing is cutting red tape. There's a RAINS Act right in Congress right now.
Oh, so you're confirming that government does have a role. Okay, gotcha. Go ahead.
Let me be clear here. I am not one of these guys that says government has no role. Because government does have a role. And sometimes it's cutting red tape. Sometimes it's making sure the right level of government is taking care of something. Government does have a role in this whole thing. Sometimes
talk a little bit to us about the outsourced energies, et cetera. How do we get those back here in America?
If you look at what jobs have been outsourced in our manufacturing sector, and so what do I look at when I look at the 5th Congressional District? I see a lot of potential. I mean, I see a lot of warehouses. I see a lot of empty land, a lot of brown fields. We can bring them back. We need to talk to these guys and enter in a dialogue with these guys. Hey, what are the regulations we need to tailor? Okay? There's red tape, and then there's some regulations that are one-size-fits-all because they come from the federal government. Mm. What regulations do we need to tailor to get you back in here and producing your product in the 5th Congressional District?
And with respect to reducing and bringing their product back in, you earlier talked in terms of that, what's just called jobs. So you are guaranteeing that significant jobs and employment will return to the 5th District. Do you have a figure for us, by the way? 5,000, 10,000, 15,000 jobs will return to the 5th District?
No, but what I will say is this, okay? And I will personally guarantee, if I do not make significant progress, significant needle moving progress. Mm-hmm. I won't run for re-election.
Okay.
I won't.
Let me ask you a question
to somebody else who's smarter.
Sure. Let me ask you a question along those lines also. And this has to do directly with the contest here in the 5th District and maybe the philosophical difference between you and the incumbent. What is your position on entitlements?
We need to strengthen our entitlement programs, and I'm not 100% certain that Congressman Ellison's focus is in that direction. Because if you look at his
budget for all, if you look at his budget for all, the people's budget summary
says that the first bullet there, we will not cut Medicare, Social Security, or Medicaid. Yet, that is the first thing that happened when they signed on and voted for Obamacare, $716 billion out of Medicare. That's undisputed. And they can sit there and say, well, Paul Ryan did the same thing too. I don't care what Paul Ryan did.
Well, I'm not signing on to that budget either. Mr. Fields, that's the presidential debate. I want to know what you, as a single congressman, one of 435 sitting there in the House of Representatives, what you will be able to do, how you will be able to caucus, maybe even have to reach across the aisle a lobby and et cetera, what you're going to do as it pertains to the issue of entitlements and making sure that as long as entitlements continue, how, quote-unquote, the voters of the 5th District will get, quote-unquote, their fair share?
Well, it's not just their fair share. It's what they've earned, okay, in a lot of cases. And
well, that's
what
fair
I mean,
share.
In 99% of the cases is what they earned. They put their money in Social Security. They put their money in Medicare. They need to get something out of it.
What's your position on the Social Security Trust Fund?
I'm not saying we should privatize it. Where I think Social Security should be for these kids walking around on college campuses and potentially in the high school classrooms, they need to be ready to have a different system. And what I like that system to be is a numbered account. It's called the Chilean model. Herman Cain talked about it during the campaign when he was there.
Now, you're talking about
that
something
model,
that came out of Santiago, Chile? Is that what you're talking about?
Right, the Chilean government. How you do retirements down there, their system works, is your money goes into a Social Security account. It's a numbered account. It's yours. You own it. At the end of your working career, you buy yourself an annuity, okay, and that annuity pays you X number of dollars. Why I like that model is because I want
to
count
my number. You're
talking
about the model in Chile, in the Republic of Chile, right?
That is correct. That is correct.
Now, let me just say this to you. Do you know who the architect, the original architect of that Chilean philosophy and program was?
No, but I'm sure you're going to tell me.
The late President Allende, who was, of course, unfortunately assassinated. Because he was a leftist, and that was a socialist program. But it's interesting to hear you embrace that. Let me go back, though, to the entitlement.
I don't
work.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
works.
Why I say it. So you're prepared to reach across the aisle to advance a program such as that.
My dad is a white liberal, and he happens to be a bigger lefty than anyone I've met in the state of Minnesota. And so the fact of the matter is, I love my dad. He's my hero. And I listen to him all the time.
All of our fathers are heroes. I mean, all of our fathers are heroes. My father, I know, Mr. Allen's father was a hero. I mean, sometimes that's something that folks think that us folk don't understand. But my greatest hero was my father and my grandfather's. But, let me go one additional place, because I want to get a little better feel on how you're prepared to reach across the aisle. Have you had any conversations, and has Speaker Boehner suggested to you what the strategy may be with respect to forming coalitions?
No, I mean, look, my conversation with him was brief. I mean, he's a very busy man. And I will say that the conversations that I've had with him and other members of Congress, whether it's Congressman Klein or Congressman Kravac or Congressman Paulson.
Congressman for back up in the 8th Congressional District. Yeah.
That's right.
Chip,
I was just
Chip,
spent
Chip.
Some
okay.
time with him today. Chip's a good
guy. Let me ask you this.
We only
have so much time. Would it be your intention, sir, to request admission to the Black Congressional Caucus? Would you caucus with them, or would you go in a different direction?
I'm not certain that I can. I do not like the words that came out of Emmanuel Cleaver's mouth, and I certainly respect him for his past works. But
what were those words?
Well, frankly, he says he said this in an article on the Root that was President Obama. We give him in the Black Congressional Caucus. We've given the president a pass because he's the first Black president. I'm not giving anyone a pass.
Okay.
I don't care if you're a Black. I don't care if you're a Republican, Mitt Romney, Obama. I'm not giving anyone a pass.
Let me ask you a question, Candidate Fields, though this is a Senate race as opposed to a congressional race. What's your feeling about the senatorial challenger in Missouri, Congressman Atkins? What's your feeling about some of his statements on the issue of abortion and et cetera?
At the end of the day, the man's got to stand on his own words. And I believe he said some things that were certainly inappropriate, inaccurate. He apologized for those things. You know, Congressman Ellison didn't pay a whole bunch of parking tickets, got his driver's license revoked more times than he can count, and that's a quote from him, and, you know, didn't pay taxes and all this other business.
Mm.
Okay, does that make
him? Senator. Now you're talking about Congressman Ellison. Okay.
What I'm saying is this. People do things. People say things. Okay? At the end of the day, the voters got to sit there and decide the value, what weight they're going to give those things.
Did you think that Joe Wilson out of South Carolina was correct when he called President Barack Obama a liar 2 years ago?
I recall the incident. I don't recall the details. Do I think it's appropriate to call the president of the – I don't think it's appropriate to call anybody a liar, to be honest with you. And frankly, more than dozens of times, I can say that, I've been called a liar by the Ellison campaign. And that's there's no room for that.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. You know, I want to turn you back over to Mr. Allen. Appreciate your candor, sir. Go ahead, Mr. Allen.
And I appreciate you having here, being here, Kennedy Fields. But one thing I got to ask you is that now I need to take it down to another level because I've gotten tons of tweets and some other stuff going on here on my cell phone, and I'm trying to multitask, and my producer's going crazy. And, by the way, you're listening to On Point with Mr. Ronald A. Edwards and Don Allen on Black Politics in Minneapolis on Blog Talk Radio. Okay, I'm done. Stop waving at me. Okay, what I want to say is that, and what these people are asking, because I just made a thing that we wanted, me and Mr. Edwards wanted to talk to you. We just don't want a bunch of chatter in there, so we want to get some things out. But now I have to go down to the black community. You are a black man.
Absolutely.
We don't, in Minnesota, as you know, being a Marine, you know, me being an Army person, you know, we're all green in the Army, and we really don't look at races that much. But here in Minnesota, especially in the 5th Congressional District, black people don't control much of anything. I don't know if you noticed last night, but on Facebook I had posted that, you know, there's a possibility that you will be on the air with us today, pending your other, you know, engagements. And yet, lo and behold, you called, and a man of God wrote on there that Chris Fields is nothing but an Uncle Tom, and it kind of set me back because, I mean, in our pre-production meeting, we kind of had this conversation, Mr. Edwards and I, and if you're an Uncle Tom, who are the people they get their money from? Is my point.
Oops.
So And so I guess my point is, you know, we don't own anything, and you know the easiest path to slavery is to form an addiction to a commodity which we do not control. And so, with that said, how can we turn around? Right now, as it stands, and you've known this, candidate Fields, I mean, we've talked a couple times, I guess, since you've been running, not very long, 2 or 3 minutes, but you know the situation in the black community here. You know that we don't have a functioning flagship black organization. We don't have a functioning state legislative, cordial and diplomatic relationship to the senators here. I know this is a state level. All of our black agencies in the state of Minnesota, fact, get their money to run whatever programs are authorized by Caucasians, period.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my thing is that I am trying to figure out how we can, without being labeled as black nationalist radicals or Black Panthers, who did really good things in Chicago, by the way.
Or scumbags.
Yeah, or scumbags. Yeah, we don't want to get scumbags either. How can we don't want to get punched and fall under a car?
That's right.
That's a whole different story. Shout out to Congressman Ellison. Anyway, how can we get the wealth back in our community? I mean, and I got some suggestions here, but is it through education? Is it through, if it's not working, is it through teaching fiscal responsibility in the third grade up? How do we keep, like, I know you've been, like, out in San Diego, Candidate Field. Mm-hmm. You're a Marine. You traveled everywhere. Now you still travel. And I know you've been, like, Atlanta, South Carolina, North Carolina, and different places where you can walk in an airport. see black men and women at the airport, on the streets working, at the hotels, in the government offices, and you come to Minnesota and looking for another black person in those type areas that's an American black, is like a white man in Africa looking for another white man. So, I mean, how do you address that at a congressional level? Because, you know, I don't have any confidence at this point in Congressman Ellison and the cheerleading that's been going on for jobs, which we're going to talk about a little later, Mr. Edwards and I, but how to address this but yet keep diplomatic and cordial relationships with the different quote-unquote players or tastemakers? Go ahead, please.
Yeah, well, I think what we need to do is start building coalitions, okay? Because, look, it's really a problem nationally. What we've been doing ain't working for us. We have a president of the United States that does not have an agenda to move African Americans in this country forward. Right here in Minneapolis, we have a congressional district representative who cannot move. He does not have a plan. Look, he canceled that debate at the Minneapolis Urban League, and Congressman Ellison does not want to have this debate in the North Side in the black community. He does not have a record of promoting economic growth in that community. Going around and, getting a couple of bucks here for some government program, a couple of bucks here, that ain't going to do much. The problem is much bigger than that. And what I've been successfully able to do is connect the dots for people. Look, we have over 17% unemployment amongst African Americans here, okay? Congressman Ellison thinks that that's a job for the city council. You know what his remedy is? Higher taxes for everyone. Sometimes he says it's the rich, higher taxes for the rich. More government regulation because he says it creates jobs. And reparations for slavery. That's his prescription, okay? I have a different prescription. And what I've been able to do is connect the dots with people. And what I've told people consistently since I started this race is that this, look, if you allow our minority communities to continue to languish with the largest unemployment gap between black and whites in the country, with the largest achievement gap between black and whites in the entire country, if you continue to let that happen, everybody in the 5th Congressional District and across throughout the whole country here, because this problem happens elsewhere, we will all suffer. That's increased social spending. That's people who are not going to work, not contributing to the economy, but instead, the rest of us, the middle class that everyone wants to covet, they'll have to pay more in taxes for that increased social spending. And you know what? Some of that spending will be spent on locking people up because you gave them no options, and then they went and did something that they shouldn't have been doing. And so this is a national crisis. It really is. In the 5th Congressional District, the only thing a congressional rep should be talking about is jobs in the economy, but that's not where Congressman Ellison is. Where he is, he wants to be famous. He wants to talk to the king of Saudi Arabia and all this other business. I want to focus on getting all of us employed and being able to go on and live their dreams. Because if you can't do it with the minority community, guess what? All the nice ethnic other ethnic groups out here, they're going to have to pay more in taxes. So this is not just a black problem. This is an everybody problem.
Okay, I agree. Well, before I let you go here, Mr. Edwards, do you have any other questions, closing questions?
No. I appreciate the candor of the candidate, and clearly he's enunciating his platform. Of course, he has said some very profound and accurate things as it pertains to the current incumbent in office, and so I'm quite sure that the incumbent has his supporters. Maybe some of them will call in and will contest or challenge in a civil manner. After Mr. Fields goes off the air, some of the statements he's made, I hope that, you know, they've taken the time to remember them because there are some very profound points that he's made. But I have no further questions for him. And just at this time, Mr. Allen, as you excuse him, I want to thank him for taking the time to join us here on the air.
Yeah, yeah, we appreciate it.
Thanks, gentlemen. I truly believe it. And I just want to say this. Look, it has been far too long that black people in this 5th Congressional District and throughout the country, we have been treated like an inconvenient truth, and I seek to end that. It is time that everyone come together on this.
All right. Well, thank you for your time.
All right, thank you, sir.
We'll talk soon.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Gentlemen.
Okay.
Thanks. You're live on air with On Point. We have a caller. Go ahead, call your first name and where you're calling from.
Yeah, my name is Larry Welch. I'm calling from Minneapolis. And
is
I have
this
a
Mr.
question.
Welch, formerly Des Moines, Iowa?
Yeah. Hey, how you doing?
Okay. Ron? Hey, how you doing? Go right ahead, sir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just have a couple of questions. Number one, a point was made that Congressman Ellison focuses has become an expert in international affairs. What about us here? And I just want to mention the fact that I don't think we can overlook the fact that he's in a national job, which him being a representative of his constituency here in Minneapolis, he needs to focus on our problems, but as well he needs to be competent on foreign issues and international issues and national issues. Now, there's another thing that I'd like to mention, and that is that you may not have intended to do so, but you gave me the distinct impression that you were promising, not just advocating, that if elected, Cisco will come to the North Side, build and hire black contractors. And I just wonder if that's not being a little bit optimistic. Finally, my last question or my last focus point is that you said that you have been successful in connecting the dots. But I didn't hear any specific dots that you've connected. Only thing that I heard you talk about were areas that needed improvement, but you didn't give me no idea as to how you would improve them. And I'll leave and let you comment on that, if you will, please.
Well, Mr. Welch.
Thank you, Mr. Welch. The caller apparently doesn't understand, though, that the candidate is no longer on the air with us, and so he would not be commenting. It's Mr. Allen and Mr. Edwards, but I think the points are well made by the caller.
Yes.
He did not connect the dots, if you will. He talked in kind of an executive summary, if you will. That's the reason I asked him specifically the questions about when you talk in terms of $2 trillion that you're going to bring back to the mother country, if you will. What does that do with your alliances and allegiance, particularly to Europe, who are in dire straits, if you will? I think that it's something that that Mr. Fields, Mr. Allen, should give consideration to, that he needs to provide just a tad more specificity as it pertains to what he's saying, because there is kind of the shadow of what has become the cornerstone of the Republicans in this national election, and that is a lot of reflection and no solutions.
Yeah, I will have to agree with that 100%, Mr. Edwards, on that well, local and national level. They just, and this is a strange year anyway, you know, with the federal elections, you know, Obama, and I said I wouldn't be talking about Obama, but this is relevant to what, you know, the point I'm trying to make. But it seems like the last 8 months before November that really nothing gets done. There seems to be a lot of talk about it. And
yes,
and as you spoke so elegantly and said that, the GOP has no plan. there's never been anything on the table other than to get the black man out of the presidency.
And, absolutely.
And so, you know, me as a card-carrying conservative, I have a real problem with that, not only because I have to look at it as who's the best man for the job. Well, if you boil it down, if your side is not putting anything on the table, then the best man for the job is someone that's currently doing it or actually is putting something on the table, you know? And, you know, you don't want to go down in the Titanic, but again, you know, until there's something put on the table. And I had a long conversation with a sociologist here in town, Mr. Edwards, who kind of schooled me on what was going to happen if the Republicans don't change their platform. And he actually said that first, you know, President Obama's going to get in for 4 more years. Mm-hmm. Then when he's done, Hillary's going to be there for 8 years, a possibility. And after she's done, you know, you might have her vice president, whoever that's going to be in. And the only way for them to break that cycle is to start looking at these different items of interest to the American people as a whole and quit getting these traditional stuffed shirts like Romney, who can't relate with anyone, you know, anywhere. You know, I would like to meet him and take him down to J.D. Hoyt's on a Friday night and just watch him sweat.
And absolutely, I think you're absolutely correct on that, both he and Ryan, actually, on that particular point. What I'm interested in, have you received any texts? Do we have any cold calls holding in defense, if you will? Though I know folks will say that the congressman, the current incumbent, doesn't need to be defended, but you really have to, because this is an election. Let me go to something the last caller said, because I love this particular area. He raised the question about the congressman's expertise in foreign affairs, and though Mr. Fields, the challenger, I thought did not necessarily dabble in that particular area, but that's why Don and Ron are here. I've never had the feel that the congressman really has that necessary depth as it pertains to foreign affairs. He's concentrated with respect to the Middle East, but I thought that he was kind of absent, if you will, during the Arab Spring, the Arab uprising, if you will. I didn't hear the kind of detail and specificity coming from him with respect to what that meant, the social change that took place, starting first in Tunisia, Egypt, Morocco, and, of course, the whole situation in Libya. By the way, just on that particular question as it pertains to the American government's culpability, a independent investigation of the death of Muammar Gaddafi has just been released, and as I've said on a couple programs over the last year, that it was clear that Muammar Gaddafi was intentionally murdered, assassinated for any number of reasons. But I've never had the feel that, and the reason I say this is that I do have to say, Mr. Allen, that I see a certain inconsistency in the I'm a friend of the Arab world, because the reason I ask the question about entitlements is that I've been fascinated by the amount of entitlements that have gone into the Jewish community. And, particularly, St. Louis Park, that kind of thing. But particularly, the relationship with the Jewish community, which seems to be extremely friendly. And I well remember the congressman going to Gaza a year ago and standing on the rubble. And as I was watching him standing there, I thought, well, you didn't have to go to Gaza. You could have just gone to North Minneapolis and still stood on the rubble that, quote unquote, is the dismantling of the African-American community. And one of the things we were pressing Mr. Fields. You know, I thought that Mr. Fields did, the challenger, did score some points here a couple weeks ago when he talked about what the congressman did after the tornado of 2011.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I thought he made some salient points, and if this was a evenly divided Democrat and Republican enclave, the 5th Congressional District, It could have given him the necessary momentum, but, really we're basically an 80-20 Democrat over Republican. But the previous caller, Mr. Welsh, I thought made some interesting and raised some interesting questions with respect to the alleged expertise, the true vision, the true savvy, if you will, of the international picture. Because, by the way, whoever wins on November 6th is going to be confronted with a very changing and very volatile world. And I just throw these countries out as it pertains to that. I throw out Iran. I throw out Syria. I throw out North Korea. Oops. I throw out certainly China. Mm-hmm. The Chinese were not happy in what they consider to be China bashing that's going on. And I'm always puzzled by a country that is so in debt monetarily to another country that chooses to aggravate them by talking as if that country, in this case China, is some way or another outside the lines of conformity and regulation and et cetera, when this nation has helped aid and abet some of the policies of China as a part of the quote-unquote economic development of both sides. You understand what I'm saying, Mr. Allen?
Oh, yes, sir.
And so I look at some of these inconsistencies, if you will, and I just wonder at what point we, the American people, really wake up and, you know, really recognize that there is this hypocrisy out there. You know what I'm saying? But that's kind of our take. Maybe we just move on. Maybe there's no calls coming in. Well, what's our next item, Mr. Allen?
Well,
because, we've been moving along. We're right at the one-hour mark.
Yes, yes. And I'd like to give the call-in number. Our phone lines are wide open. The number is 347-426-3904. And I would like to send out a personal invitation to Reverend Jerry McAfee, Mr. Boyce Jones, Mr. Brian Smith, and anyone else that would like to challenge.
Louis King. Don't forget our good friend, Louis King.
Ted Mondale.
Of the Amos and Andy Show.
Yes, yes. We want you guys, if you have a question, we want you to call in, because we want to address some of the stuff that is or items or situations, disparities, whatever you wish to call them, that are going on here in the Twin Cities. But, Mr. Edwards, I don't want to get too far off track, but there is something that kind of we left off with our last show a year ago that we need to put back on the top burner. You know that in 2003, when Target was in North Minneapolis, the Target store over there on Broadway, 904 West Broadway, I think it was.
Yes.
When Target stores, and it's kind of a personal thing for me because I'm kind of upset, and then maybe you can calm me down a little and kind of, you know, get my mind right. When Target left North Minneapolis, there was an uproar. Of course, the city of Minneapolis was complicit in making sure that they could get some tax break and get into downtown Minneapolis there. So Target closed the store on Broadway.
Yeah.
Now, I guess white guilt or whatever I'd want to say led them to grant the North Minneapolis business community a total of $300,000. And remember, this was in 2003.
Yes.
Well, I was curious because I remember that whole fiasco, and I remember people talking about it and how people said how good they were going to do. And, you know, I'm going to pause that story because we had someone to call in. I don't want to leave them on hold past 10 seconds, Mr. Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
You are live on the air, your first name, and where you're calling from. Hello.
I don't know.
Yeah, I can hear you. Okay, maybe they'll call back. But anyway, getting back to my story. So earlier this year, I contacted, I made some calls. First, I called General Rec at the Target stores, who told me that wasn't under the impression that the money was still around. And while I'm telling this story, if I get a call, Mr. Edwards, I'm just going to zoom him in.
Why, certainly, because that's most important, the call.
Yes. And we do have a caller.
Let's get him. Okay.
You are live on the air. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, this is Cynthia, but I was actually just listening.
Okay, well, continue to listen then. No problem.
Thank you.
You were live
on. Go ahead, Mr. Allen. You were talking in terms, you made some inquiries as it pertains to actually the $300,000.
Yes. And we also, and callers, I have 812 and 349 on hold. Just give me a second here. Yes, I made inquiries targets Generec about the $300,000 left there through a deal with Don Samuels and the Minneapolis Foundation and a couple other politicians. And so Ms. Rec was pretty surprised that I would even be calling 9 years later to even inquire about the $300,000 because evidence she held in high regard. And so with that said, I got in touch and found out that the Minneapolis Foundation, the same people who handled the tornado money, have been sitting on the $300,000 for 9 years.
A lot of interest on that kind of money.
A lot of interest on there, yes. And then I pressed them. I says, well, what are you going to do to help North Minneapolis' businesses? Well, then they told me that they were going to more than likely grant the money to the Minnesota Black Chamber of Commerce. And all my red flags and my spider senses and my Wolverine hair on back of my neck and back stood up. And I said, now, wait a minute. How does that make any sense? That's a one-person operation with a board of directors that's old as Moses, and respectfully old as Moses. And what is the plan? And so they told me to contact the Chamber of Commerce. And Ms. Haggard, Leah Haggard, is the executive director who has to this day never gotten back to me. And so I called back to the Minneapolis Foundation. I says, hey, she's not calling me back, you know, probably something I wrote or whatever. But what are you going to do with the money? And he says, well, they're going to do, I guess Ms. Haggard had ended up calling them back and said they're going to do a micro loan program. And as you know, Mr. Edwards, any microloan program has to be administered, which means that you have to bring consultants in if you're a one-person shop. And that can cost you between $10,000 to $20,000 or maybe more. So if all they have is $300,000, then we've lost about $50,000 of that with the administration and information distribution about a microloan program. So I decided to throw another wrench in there, Mr. Edwards. I asked, what was the technology piece? And I could be comfortable with this if you show me the technology piece for small business. We sit here today, 60 days later, and have not gotten an answer, Mr. Edwards.
I don't think you'll get one.
Yeah.
All right, get the calls. Okay.
Hey, and, we'll get that real quick. Let me just see here. Put them through. Hi, you're on the air. Can I help you?
Yes, this is Brother James. How you doing?
Brother James.
Hey, Brother James, how you doing, my brother? All right. What can we do for you?
I just want to say I sure feel good to know that you two cats is back. Brother Penn back and Brother Penn Black. This is better than Sex on the Beach.
All this malfeasance,
I tell you. You guys are really doing a good job, and welcome back.
All right. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Appreciate it.
Malfeasance while in office. Go ahead on. Go ahead. Get the calls in if you got anybody holding. Don, they take priority.
And I'd like to let you know, a good buddy of mine down in Louisiana is checking out On Point as we speak. We want to give him a big shout out down there and his famous little baby on all them Target ads. You know who I'm talking about. And so we appreciate you tuning in, sir, and hope you stay with us in the near future here. But, Mr. Edwards, you know, I guess my point is, like, you know, I had meetings with different black folks here, stratified, trying to run organizations, and I have issues when there's not a process in place or a place for open discourse where you don't have to agree with everything that's going on, but yet you're trying to solve the problem or the issue that's happening. You know, you're trying to be a part of the solution, and they don't see that. And so with that said, I mean, we have the tornado money since we last talked. We have this year, we have the voter ID and the gay marriage amendment money out there on the street that was just, and I mean, we're not going to go into names or logistics because that report will come out through the FEC very shortly. And then we'll know exactly the amounts and who got the money and what they did with it, because obviously our communities are not getting educated. I was walking down on Broadway, again, near Cub Foods, actually going to the cell phone store to try to find my wife a cover for her cell phone. And I passed by the bus stop, and these brothers had said, yeah, you know, I'm voting yes. People should marry who they want to marry. I'm like, oops. You know, they really had no grasp on the concept of yes and no as it pertained to that particular amendment.
And right. That, absolutely.
Yeah, and so that's part of the education that's not getting out there. You have color to vote here in the Twin Cities in North Minneapolis, and the best thing that they could do, or the best thing that I'm being facetious, Mr. Edwards, totally, but the best thing they've done is have a party down at Elixir in downtown Minneapolis to watch the debate and have a discussion afterwards, okay? Now, if you sit down at Elixir, you're drinking, you ain't really watching the debate. Now you're going to have a really civil discussion. So, and what happened to the community engagement part? Because, you know, we can fill our, us as black people, we can fill up a club in a minute. But if you want to fill up an auditorium on a social issue, I mean, we're hard pressed to do that.
Well, Don, but at least they didn't have it at the private home on Lake of the Isles. Oops.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's a whole other issue with the council.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't been back in a year now, and we're not trying to have an inside joke, but this is all factual incidents that are happening right now to African Americans in the state of Minnesota. And what has happened is money is being routed, events are being routed outside of the community to people that have never been to a meeting in the community, don't come to the community, but yet our black organizations, in this case, the Council on Black Minnesotans, let me add Mark Dayton's, Governor Mark Dayton's Council on Black Minnesotans, have had the opportunity to award a $30,000 contract to a mixed-race woman that lives on Lake of the Isle who has listening sessions. And those listening sessions, they bring people out to Lake of the Isles, okay? But at a certain time, you niggas got to go home because you can't be out there on Lake of the Isles. And so I guess my problem with that, you know, number one, I believe in capitalism. I don't have a problem with people making money, including myself. But why is it that we don't have these listening sessions with Governor Dayton's Council on Black Minnesotans in our community? Why do they have...
Well, now, Mr. Allen, let me correct you on that, because just this past week, there was a listening session sponsored by the Council on Black Minnesotans with the Met Council, the powerful Met Council, and we probably need to start moving into this whole thing of probably what is going to be the most significant economic development stimulus plan in the history of the state of Minnesota. They had an activity at the Minneapolis Urban League, and there was a grand total of 8 people, and four of them were government officials. And, you know, the topic of discussion, the genesis of reflections and et cetera, was all of this money that's going to go to African Americans and others to work on the stadium. Yet there was not a single leader there, if you will. In fact, Mr. Gray of the Urban League, whose building was in, didn't even see fit to stay around, and the meeting started at 5:30. So I have to correct you, Mr. Allen. I mean,
okay. There
have been these discussion kinds of meetings. In fact, also earlier this week, on Wednesday, there was a meeting at Fireview Park in North Minneapolis, and people like Velma Corvell and the consul, I'm talking in terms of the Met consul, were there, and they were telling the wonderful stories about the kind of opportunity and stimulus that's going to come to the colored community from the Viking Stadium. Now, of course, the meeting was at 9 o'clock in the morning, and the only persons that were basically there were all public officials, but they told wonderful, wonderful stories, wonderful tales. And so I just think we need to make sure that people have a chance to call and question us on it, because there's going to be, you know, 32%, Mr. Allen, of the hours that are going to be worked on this big stadium, the People's Stadium, by the way, is going to go to you people of color and women. Okay.
Wow. Did you say Velma Corbell's name?
Yes, Velma Corvell, the powerful directress of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, yes. She of the equity, oops, I'm sorry, she was supposed to do an equity plan, she didn't get it done. And the facility, the Sports Facility Authority, has already given out $150 million in contracts without any equity plan in place. But what the heck, you know, what we basically were told is that, you know, just give us a chance and believe in us kind of thing, you know what I mean? But $150 million already. And by the way, just for you black contractors and other contractors, the colors out there who are listening, they are finalizing right now as we speak, and it's their intention to probably have it pretty much wrapped up just for Thanksgiving. And that'll be a great Thanksgiving stimulus turkey to whoever the general contractor will be. By the way, the amount that will be awarded, $753 million, Donnie, to a white general contractor who will begin the actual construction of the People's Stadium no later than late April of next year. So these meetings have been going on, Don. So I have to correct you, you know, we want to be transparent. We want to be accurate. And so meetings are going on, except your community's not being invited.
Exactly. And Mr. Edwards, one thing that you, you know, you always make me go back and read text when I kind of like miss something, but I guess, in my last lesson, the Minneapolis Urban League is in some of the legislation as far as job creation.
Yes. Yeah. Senator Hayden and State Representative Bobby Joe Champion and then Senator Harrington and State Representative Duran over in St. Paul, a very courageous sister, made sure that the colored organization, the Minneapolis Urban League, was put in the legislation under employment, under the section identified as employment, though there's some other heavier stuff as it pertains to the duties of the authority. The design of the stadium, the actual construction of the stadium. But they did put into the colored category the Minneapolis Urban League, Indian OIC, that's Indian OIC, not Summit OIC, Sabathany, which was kind of lost on me because Sabathany is nothing but a clearinghouse where organizations have their offices, and a employment agency. Employment assistance agency. At one point, they were talking about is it an organization called Venture or something like that out there on Fourth Avenue? But anyways, yes, it is in the legislation. In fact, we're waiting for, and Mr. Allen and I did raise the question, though we're not going to go into the many details that we discuss with the Sports Facility Authority, but we are clearly waiting for the Urban League to begin, first of all, a big job fair, okay, as well as their recruitment and training program that should be in place so that when the white general contractor gets that $753 million contract before the end of this year, that our leadership and community is in position to indicate what it is that we need and what we have available. By the way, 32% of the hours, Don, I mean, we prorated that as it pertains to salaries and benefits. That's about $248 million. That's a lot of money. You're talking about a economic uplift. But the plans and everything have to be in place, Don, you see, because
yes,
the white folks are saying – they don't intend to do anything unless the colors are able to come up with a plan and produce the warm bodies.
Exactly, too. And not to get into many details either, but, you know, the Mortenson model, which said there would be 7,500 jobs, Mr. Edwards.
By the way, we're talking about M.A. Mortenson, the big construction company. Right.
They
did the work on the school district's building that had no black folk working over there. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yes. And if you base the seven, and there's not a plan because, like you said, the Velma Court Bill and the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights did not do an equity plan by June 29th as mandated by the Minneapolis City Council. But if you look at that number of 7,500 and all the jobs and the subs and the sub jobs, this is just, you know, just imagine if you can or vision a stadium and how many working parts it has. If you look at the number of qualified contractors and maybe qualified laborers, I'm not talking about guys from Summit Academy, OIC. I'm talking about dudes that are in the union that might be African-American, Native American, Somali, or whatever. You're looking at a rough amount of about 112 folks, okay? And I figured that based on 7,500 workforce number to build the stadium. So they're talking these exorbitant numbers like 32%.
Mm-hmm.
And in reality, we'll be lucky if we squeak out of there with 1.5% when it's all said and done, which is about 112 people over 3 years. Because as Mr. Mondale told us both, you know, people aren't there for the whole 3 years. They kind of walk in and walk out.
But that's absolutely correct. Because of the specialty requirements of the construction, the many different categories that come into play as it pertains to the actual construction of this, the People's Stadium. I want to keep, you know, people outside of Minnesota that this is the People's Stadium. Only problem here is that those people called blacks are not going to be a part of it. But anyways, it's the People's Stadium.
Yeah, that's what they say. Yeah, and it's not really a good situation for us because we have not had the people in place to really make sure that this is done. I know Wanda Kirkpatrick with MEP Council has done little to nothing to make sure that there are people of color working on the stadium. And though she sits down there in the Sports Authority office, I am nervous, Mr. Edwards. I am nervous for those that will not have jobs, that will be seeking jobs and won't get them just simply because of lack of a process.
Well, lack of a process, which equates into the absence of an equity plan, which, I mean, I have to give credit to Council President Barb Johnson and her colleagues, who on May 12th of this year passed a resolution signed by Mayor R.T. Ryback, of course, who's in the midst of, you know, being involved with the reelect President Barack Obama campaign. But on the 25th of May, they signed it, and they basically said in the resolution that they expected Ms. Corvall to have a preliminary report and to set up a number of committees. I assume that some of our powerful leaders have been approached to sit on the development committee. And there's additional language in the legislation which talks in terms of the city's requirement, immediate requirement to have a kind of workforce committee in place to help guide this and et cetera. And, you know, none of this is happening. And I repeat again the number, $150 million in contracts have already been awarded.
Yes.
And, in fact, let me just spend a minute because I know this is the kind of information that, in fact, is not out there. And the Star Tribune has clearly indicated that it has no intention of providing a background to the African American community. When the contract was awarded for the architectural contract, that is a $34 million will ultimately, you know, pan out to about almost $50 million. But when that was given to a big, powerful white architectural firm in Dallas, Texas, what people really didn't talk about is that they had an inside track from the get-go, because one of the issues is shall there be or shall there not be a retractable roof, what that will cost. And what happened was the chairwoman of the Sports Facility Authority said something very interesting in a copyrighted story in the Minneapolis Star Tribune 3 weeks ago, is that there will be no taking away from the amenities that are expected for inside the stadium. And so unless the Vikings and others can come up with money outside of the $1 billion to either put in a retractable stadium or what is called a big window or what is called a moving wall, if you will, such as what's at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, Indiana. This architectural firm out of Dallas designed both of those stadiums, Jones's Stadium there in Dallas, if you will, for the Cowboys, and the Colts Stadium, Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. And what is so distressing about this is that this architectural company has never had any relationship with a black architect. I don't think they know, according to what, and I had discussion with them, had been in discussions as a part of journalistic responsibility. And, you know, HKS, by the way, is the name of the company. You know, they have no relationship with African Americans. So anyways, what happened was at the time that Mr. Allen and I met with the Sports Facilities Authority, they were very upfront because they were actually that same day, the previous day and the following day, they were interviewing the prime subcontractors. Now, there has been put in place for some of you out there that maybe have background in engineering, mechanical, or architectural, There is a group called the Viking Stadium Consortium, VSC, which has been formed, if you will. It's primarily, you know, white females, sprinkling of Asians, sprinkling of a couple foreign-born blacks, if you will, and then just a couple of African-Americans. But what's happened is that when the prime subcontractor was brought in, there was not a lot of discussion about doling out any money to anybody in the three disciplines that I just reflected on, mechanical, architectural, in that particular situation. And so there's $34 million that basically, in fact, you know, actually the majority of $34 million is going outside the state of Minnesota, as we pointed out in our column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. But all of this is being suppressed, Don.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get any discussion from the leaders. And, boy, I got to tell you, the day that Mr. Allen and I met with the stadium authority, or in this case the facilities authority, our leaders had been there at two separate meetings, a 9 o'clock meeting, and then I think they met again at 12, because when Mr. Allen and I arrived, many of our other leaders were leaving, you know, the head of the powerful Minority Contract Association and others. But what's happened is that I know I can't speak for Mr. Allen on this. He's his own man. But I was just shocked and disappointed at the absence of community, because it really hadn't been broadcast, or the community had not been made aware that this very important meeting being hosted by the Met Council to get, you know, colored overview of the future, if you will, and the great plan. And I got to tell you, listeners, when we started raising questions about the participation of African Americans, it was like a lot of blank looks, you know. And by the way, in closing on this, the 32% goal, people really need to give credit to Human Rights Commissioner Kevin Lindsay, because he was the man that came up with the idea way back in February.
Yeah.
Okay. And he took quite a pounding, and people went to Governor Mark Dayton and said, you know, this Negro needs to be put out of business. He needs to, you just put him in office, and here he is up here talking about, you know, 32% participation by people of color, and particularly Negroes, you know what I'm saying? And it appears that the governor has tried to hold the position, but I was shocked at how the Met Council and the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, Ms. Corvell and others, just pirated and ripped off Commissioner Kevin Lindsay's idea and plan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Now, understand again, there is no plan, though, for the implementation and to guarantee the supervision and the monitoring and et cetera, if you will. In fact, I just heard an interesting report, and that is that some of our friends, Mr. Allen, were talking in terms of putting a bogus company in place to actually do the monitoring.
Mm.
Yeah, company's name starts with a B. Ooh. And I said, well, how are you going to do that when this is a private investment, or this is a private company, and they don't have statutory authority to enforce anything? I mean, so if they find that they're, as Ted Mondale pointed out to Mr. Allen and myself, that this is not going to be like Target Field, and this is where you had no plan, no program, and the numbers were, you know, cooked, if you will. So I'm just trying to figure out who it is that's supposed to pretend to get the piece of the action to monitor the compliance with the goals. Do you have any idea, Mr. Allen?
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, I really, you know, I really wish I knew.
Yeah. Well, like I said, get the phone number again. The lines are open in case anybody wants to examine us on the plan for the Viking Stadium. Certainly would be happy to answer them this afternoon.
Sure. It is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. You can give us a call. We're rolling into the last 30 minutes of our show here today after a year of taking a break, and we want to hear from you. We want to know. Actually, Mr. Edwards, I'm getting pictures in from North Minneapolis where Reverend Jerry McAfee, Congressman Keith Ellison, Keisha Gaskins, and Bobby Joe Champion are at an event right off Broadway over there. And
now, is this Keisha Gaskins of the The Vermin Legal Center there in New York.
Yes.
Keisha Gaskins, formerly of the Dorsey Law Firm and now director of voting ID and voting regulations at the Renner Center Law Center, named for a former Supreme Court justice. Is that who you're talking about, Mr. Allen?
Yes, that's who I'm talking about.
Okay, now is Brett Buckner there?
I don't see him in these pictures yet. I am actually looking for him, and I'm scanning, and I don't see him right now, but I am definitely looking at the pictures that I'm being sent here in the studio. So the people are just giving me a heads up.
Now, we have massive crowds out there. What are we looking at, 7,000, 8,000, 10,000?
No, you know, you're looking at probably, I'm looking at a picture that might have 200 people in it with a marching band, drum corps, and their MF.
Okay, that would be the Major Tops Drum and Bugle Corps, named after the late Major Tops. I imagine that's what that group is.
Yeah, are you familiar with a building over north with a blue shield on it that says it's MFT 58?
No, not really. A blue building with,
no, it's
with
a white
the initials.
With a blue sign with a building.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's what I'm looking at. Now I'm trying to just figure out the geographical location here. Maybe we can get Miss Marie to call in and let us know exactly where these pictures are being taken at.
This is to get us to get the numbers out in what is one of the most negative area of precincts anywhere in the United States. I mean, some of the worst voter turnout happens to take place right there in North Minneapolis, particularly in Precinct 19, Precinct 8, Precinct 5, things like that. Okay, well, that's just great, man. But you said it's only 200. They must be giving you a bad picture.
No, it's a good picture.
Oh, come on, Don, because there's a whole lot more money that's been handed out to do this than just to bring out 200 people.
Yeah, I'm. It looks like this picture. There's quite a few people out there. This is just one shot. That I'm looking at, and pretty interesting. And there's something else I was going to go back to here that I am just in awe of. There's going to be the Givens Foundation inaugural gala. Inaugural? Does that mean like the first time?
Now, when you say the Givens family, is this the movie actress Givens?
No,
that used to be married to Mike Tyson? Who are you talking about, Don? I'm sorry.
This is the local Givens Foundation inaugural gala they're having.
Oh, you mean the African-American, the Minnesota African-American Museum in South Minneapolis. Okay, gala?
Actually, if the Givens Foundation is not necessarily it's not the museum, it's
okay, named for the late Archie Givens Sr., the father. Okay, and they're having a what now, Don? I'm not quite picking up on.
They're having a gala tonight, a fundraising celebration. $100 per ticket, limited seating out at Sofitel Minneapolis, out on 78th Street in West Bloomington. Robin Robinson looks like the host.
Okay.
Sponsored by
formerly of KMSP, of KMSP, now residing in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Okay.
And now the Grotto Foundation, Legacy, KBEM FM, the Humanity Center. They have a lot of sponsors here, Mr. Edwards. And wow, General Mills, Target, Northwest Area Foundation, Best Buy. Legacy.
Well, now the gala is to do what? Is this the foundation is doing what? And the foundation is not to be confused with the museum. Is that what you're telling me?
That is correct. And I'm opening.
I'm opening
it up online. The Givens Foundation will celebrate literature. The Givens Foundation for African American Literature will celebrate 40 years of service in the Twin Cities community by hosting an inaugural gala at the Hotel Sofitel. The gala. Harlan Renaissance theme. And just goes into some details here. Signed by Archie Givens Jr., Herman Milligan Jr., and Arletta Little.
Okay.
And honorary co-chairs, Josie Johnson and Gary Cunningham.
Okay. And who's the guest speaker? I mean, will we bring in Denzel Washington or who?
Well, it looks like Robin Robinson from Channel 9 is the
formerly of Channel 9.
Yes, KFC.
Oh, she's going to be like the keynoter.
She's going to be
at the Hotel de la Safete. Okay.
Yeah, yes.
Okay. $100 a plate?
$100 a plate. You know, they'll probably have a little bit of turnout because I know them sponsors brought tickets for their employees because, you know, the community don't have.
Well, certainly to put a colored flavor in there. Well, that's great. So that's the foundation. So is the museum open yet?
Mr. Edwards, you know, they've missed three opening dates. Three.
Yeah, that's what I thought, yeah.
And it's an embarrassment to the black community, especially when they've had $4.5 million. And that's enough to maybe open two museums. And so,
And
there's really no professional process of fundraising. There's no professional process of community engagement. And if you're going to run, you know, a museum, like you're going to run your foundation and keep the upper crust, you know, or as Booker T. Washington said, uppity Negroes.
Okay.
Satisfied and kind of like overlook the major communities, then you're not going to have a success. It's going to be a total disaster, and that's what we have now. We have a disaster. African-American museum.
Yeah, well, you know, it was going to impart so much history to the community. I heard local movie producers on a program yesterday on one of the urban contemporary stations here in the Twin Cities, and they were talking about a film that they did that came under some criticism. The reflection was they maybe spent too much time talking about North Minneapolis, and of course that's a valid criticism because the Negro population, actually the Negro population first settled in the village of St. Anthony before there was really an incorporated city called Minneapolis. And then, you know, they began settling in what's now the Seven Corners area out on 37th and Snelling and up in the long time, what was the Black Pride in the early part of the last century, Humboldt Heights, which now is called Shingle Creek. And one of the reasons they changed it to Shingle Creek because they wanted to get away from the Negro flavor of the history of Humboldt Heights. And I've never seen anybody really talk about the black community that resided in Humboldt Heights, if you will. In fact, at one point, Humboldt Heights almost became incorporated, if you will, which would have given us one of the few all-black communities, you know, north of the Mason-Dixon line, you know, only in the state of Kansas. Is there a you know all black municipality? Just a piece of rich history, Humboldt Heights, if you will, and the Negro families that came out of there even before the turn of the last century. But hey, you know, at some point we'll probably be getting some of this history. Don't you think so, Mr. Al?
Yeah. At some point, you know, we'll figure out what's going on here, and. This is just really unusual, Mr. Edwards, to see this. They're having a silent auction. They're giving away tickets to the 213 Super Bowl, NFL Super Bowl.
2013 Super Bowl? Okay.
The silent auction. Bid for your chance to win. Trips to British Columbia, Alaska, Taos, Asheville, New York, Boston, Santa Fe. Cruises on Royal Caribbean. An African safari.
Oh, wow.
That's
almost $85,000, $90,000, $100,000 worth of tickets right there.
Yeah, Viking and Timberwolves game, dinner with Tubby Smith, tickets for two to any concert in the U.S.
Concert in the U.S.? You mean like Bruce Springsteen, people like that?
Yeah.
Bruce Springsteen, by the way, has endorsed President Barack Obama.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not like the white metal band, you know, White Boys Hate. I mean, really, you know, there's bands like that out there now. Oh, that's great. So this is going on at the voter registration?
No, this is two separate things. This is just something that someone just sent this to me and said, dude, the guy that sent it to me, he's affluent, but he doesn't want to be named. He says, really?
I understand confidentiality.
He said, really? And he also wrote a note that says, if you win the bid for the tickets to the NFL Super Bowl, the NFL Super Bowl for 2013, you better get them tickets on the spot before you leave them out of there. Okay? So.
Oh, yeah. And let me see. The Super Bowl 2013 will be played, I think, in February, first week in February. Yeah. Boy, whoever that anonymous source, and we will certainly honor that, you know, knew what they were talking about. But boy, those are like British Columbia. My God, I mean, what are we going to do? Do hunt bear, mountain goat, or what? I mean, really, there are mountain goats at elevations as high as 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 feet there in the Canadian Rockies there, if you will, and around British Columbia. That's just out of sight. So is this being offered by an organization with a 501c3?
Yeah, it is. And Mr. Edwards, I have to alert our listeners that I had wrote that this is a 2-hour show. We actually have an hour and 45 minutes that I am actually looking at the clock here.
Oh, my God, then we've only got about 5 minutes left.
Yeah, we've got 5 minutes left. And that was my fault, and I apologize. And I will make sure the next time we come on, we'll do advance notice and make sure that and I see why now, because directly after us, there's some folks from another Blog Talk radio program doing an analysis of the president and presidential debate. And so they're actually going to be on for 3 hours.
So, okay, and that's big. And certainly that may be something that we may want to give advance notice, because the final debate will take place Monday. And so we will be certainly in a position to give our own analysis and then open the phone lines for folks to give their reflections. I assume there will be a lot of debate parties, at private homes and downtown and et cetera, mm-hmm. looking at the plasma screens and et cetera. Yeah. So, hey, that's out of sight. Let's just kind of give a heads up that we'll certainly be taking a look at the final presidential debate, which will be, as we said before, this coming Monday. By the way, last night, Gallup poll, for those that have their iPads and smartphones and all that, Gallup poll, which is one of the most prestigious white think tanks and opinion polls, indicated that if the election had been held yesterday, that President Barack Obama would have lost by 6 percentage points.
Wow.
To Mitt Romney, 6 percentage points. That represents probably about 11 million to 12 million votes. That would be, we haven't had a decisive election like that in modern times. But Gallup poll, not even any of the guys standing, on the corners or sitting in the country clubs, but this is the Gallup poll that said that, again, if the election was held yesterday, that President Barack Obama would have lost by 6 percentage points. So everything is being done to discourage the legions of voters that really need to get up off their behind and get out and vote on November 6th, to discourage them to stay home, because that's one of the key ways. By the way, just want to throw this number out, Don. We did this quite a bit over the 2-year run of Blog Radio. You know, the president got a little over $62 million in 2008, and Senator McCain got $55 million, okay? So people need to know that what we're looking at is a total figure of about $118 million to $120 million Americans will get out and vote, right?
Yeah.
Now, by the way, Joe Biden, looks like the Republicans are having some problems contesting that. Joe Biden and others are saying that in early voting that President Obama is running ahead at a sufficient number. Again, these are polls and et cetera. I would have expected a little different picture. You know what I'm saying, Don?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But that could be an interesting sign, particularly in some of the swing states and particularly in states like because all the polls now all of a sudden have the president losing Colorado, Florida, and Virginia, and allegedly now in a dead heat in Ohio. That's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, that's very fascinating.
Yeah. So that means that the same kind of bump that everyone expected President Obama to get after the last debate in Nassau, New York, allegedly didn't take place, as opposed to the big, big bump that Mitt Romney got after the first debate. I tell you.
Deconstruct.
Well, okay, Don. It's good to be back. And like I say, the Don and Ron team, if you will, or Heckle and Jive. And we actually, that's how we refer to it, Heckle and Jive.
Yeah.
Kind of back, if you will, bringing the message and bringing the information. Brother Alvin.
Yes, sir.
I'll see you next Saturday.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Play my man, James.
Yeah.
Put your bad stuff. Bad louder. I